Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for drummer, musician, and master of all things two wheels, Mr. Brian Dendy. Brian, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for being here. You're actually our first guest who has traveled from out of state to be here. So welcome to Florida. Welcome to our digs.
I appreciate it. I'm more than happy to be here and really excited to be a part of it and like super excited. So thank you for having me.
So full disclosure, I've known Brian for 20 years. It's been a long 20 years for both of us.
Yeah.
We came together in the music world, but I know you as a man of many hats. And it doesn't matter if it's playing drums or motocross or bicycles. So I'm kind of curious, do you remember who the first person was that you saw in life kind of doing their thing that gave you the framework to chase these dreams?
That's a great question. I would say in terms of like on my music side specifically.
Anything. Do you remember, was it an entrepreneur around you as a kid or?
I would say I was in, it's been a while since I've thought about this, but I was in second grade, third grade, possibly something like that. And I saw, the pep band at my grade school and I saw the drummer playing and I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
It was like an automatic thing. And it was really bizarre because I remember very, very specific details about it. Like in terms of like, even the drummer who was playing his drumsticks, they don't make these anymore, but they were like see-through nylon plastic drumsticks that were the worst thing that you could possibly think of to play on. And when I saw this band, the pep band playing, and I got really excited. And I remember my parents had told me at one point, like, you were just banging on everything and like kind of like the usual start of like what drummers are. And I remember that specific moment in time of like, oh, like I want to do this. And then it just kind of went from there.
And you were like 7, 8 years old at this point?
Yeah, something like that. And then after that, my parents got me lessons with the band teacher. The band teacher had decided to like, yep, I'll teach him how to play. I learned my first like 2 grooves and then he actually left the school. And I didn't,
right away?
Like pretty much within like, let's call it 6 months.
No. I mean, like you started taking lessons right away after seeing the pep band?
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, and cause I, like my parents had saw me like really interested in this. Like I had this, like a lot of kids then like had drums with like, it was like paper drum heads and it was like toy stuff. Right. And I would just bang on that all over the place. And then like, when I saw the pep band, like the real deal, was like a very eye-opening experience for me. And then from there, like my parents got me lessons with the band teacher. And then it just kind of went from there, right? Like, and I specifically remember like that chunk of time of like, this is it, like kind of situation for me.
So you started playing pretty early. Were you playing, were your lessons, were you even taught on a kit or were you playing just like single drum, like marching band style?
My lessons were very different than, so like typical drum lessons. So like I teach like as well as playing live and those kinds of things, studio sessions. But so a typical drum lesson usually starts on the snare. Mine was not that way. He started me full kit immediately. It was very, very, very different. And now I teach that way more. I teach it more of like, here's our snare drum stuff of in terms of like learning how to read music, that kind of stuff. But then here's our fun section, which is kit based like entirely, right? And he, like, I remember that his name was Mr. Buck. I will never forget this dude.
Shout out Mr. Buck.
Yeah, right? And he, like, the first ever, even he gave me my first cassette tape of like, listen to this person play, and it was Buddy Rich. I will never forget it. Like cassette tape had like pink on the top with like a photo of Buddy Rich in the middle and then pink on the bottom. Like, I'll never forget it, like for the rest of my life. And he, but anyway, like he started me on kit immediately, like first groove, just like 2 and 4 on the snare, 1 and 3 on the kick. And it was actually just quarter notes on the hi-hat at the time. And then it went to 8th notes on the hi-hat. And that's kind of all the further we got with that before he left the school.
And you're in second, third grade at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was second grade.
Okay, so that's a time when a lot of kids will get ambitious to do like the I want to be an astronaut or I want to dig up dinosaur bone things. It's hard to pick up a an instrument at that point and the discipline to practice. Do you remember what it was like practicing and getting good at that time? Did you have to force yourself?
No. Honestly, like, I just wanted to play. I didn't really know what practicing was. Like, because Mr. Buck was, like, teaching me some, like, a couple of these grooves, I would work on those. But then after he left, I just kind of stuck with, like, I was in this, like, interesting is the wrong word, but in this period of time where I didn't know anything else, right? Like, it was like, oh, I can play this, I can play this, and then I'd just mess around a bunch, right? And as all of us, as musicians, as you know, like, messing around is how you learn to a point, right? And so for many, 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 many years, that's all I did, right, was just mess around. But I remember in terms of, like, practicing, like, it wasn't like a situation where it's like, oh, you have to go downstairs and practice your instrument. It was like, oh, I'm going to go play drums.
Ah.
It was very much that. It was like, because I wanted to, right? Like, where there are other friends of mine, like, that, like, started, like, a very specific friend of mine who I'll talk about in this journey. He started in second grade too, teacher all the way through, and was practice, very regimented. This is how it is, blah, 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 blah. Just a different way of doing it, right? Like,
and that's why I asked, because I know sometimes that can be really challenging for really young musicians.
Yeah, especially like one of my students, he's 11 years old. Getting him to practice is tough, but I tell him very specifically, like, all you need to do is 15 minutes a day. That's it. That's all it takes. And if you can accomplish that, like, 5 days a week, doing that is better than, oh, I practiced for an hour, let's say on Monday, and then I didn't touch my instrument for another week, right? It's the consistency that makes the difference.
So was one of the things that helped you have that was that you learned to play these grooves and you got kind of a shorter line between day one and being able to mess around than you would have if you learned, like, all these rudiment grooves and did something more like that? Was being able to just kind of play more what you think kind of helped you jump that curve?
Yes and no. So what changed everything was in seventh grade, a very good friend of mine, and a very good friend of ours, brother, I met for the very first time in middle school, and he was light years above me playing wise, right? And there was that switch flipped of like, oh, I haven't had a teacher. I haven't done this. I haven't done this. He has this entire time. Why didn't I do this kind of thing? But as being like kind of like the normal kid type situation, like, I was riding dirt bikes. I was playing soccer left and right. I was super interested in all these other things, which is totally fine. Like, and I was never like, I've always been this type of person where I don't have a very, like, I can't just do one thing and one thing only. Like, I just cannot do it.
Right.
Like, at all. So, but, like, I remember this specific moment in time of like, oh, I need to, there's something needs to change if I'm going to continue doing this, not for fun, let's say. Like, and I say it's always fun, but what I mean for not for fun, that's the totally wrong word, but more of a, I want to do this, like, in a band situation, maybe as a career situation.
So there was the backbone of, or I should say the background of athletics and other interests that you had alongside the music thing.
Yes, very much so.
So what do you think made music feel like it should be a priority? Just seeing somebody that had something going on that they showed you a mountain you could yet climb?
That and, I don't know, like, the best way I can describe it, I remember, and you'll be able to relate to this totally, is I remember the first time I ever played live. It was at, like, the church I was going to at the time, and I was like, this is one of the coolest feelings ever.
And right? How old, like, were you there?
That was, let's call it 12, something like that, right? Like, you can't, like, and people have asked me before, like, kind of, like, what drives you to play, and it's like, there is, like, I've tried to replicate playing drums, like playing live. I've tried to replicate in other things that I do. Mm-hmm. You can't. It's just like riding dirt bikes. You can't replicate riding dirt bikes by walking down the street or doing so. It's impossible. It's just a different feeling, right?
Right.
And I think that for me, like, that drive just kept happening. Like, I'd play live more, and then again and again, I'm like, oh, like, I really like this. Like, and it just kind of keeps going that way. But in terms of taking it more seriously, like, that switch flipped actually around the time that we met, because like, I played in bands in high school. I had a great time.
Yeah. Where does church progress into being in bands?
So that's a very good question. So a very good friend of mine, Brian Plate, who is still a dear friend of mine, I met him in high school, and he was a wicked guitar player, right? For like being like a freshman in high school, right? Or sophomore, or wherever we were at the time, right?
Yeah.
And I could play drums, and he lived about 10 minutes from me, and I lived so far from school and all that kind of stuff. He was the first person, like, musician, that I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can be in a band with someone kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I remember our high school band, like, he was the only one that could really play. I could play this like kind of one groove or two groove situation. I had gotten better, you know, since like middle school. And then like my brother was singing, and then like we had another very good friend of ours, like Dan McCoy, who has gone on to now do like live sound and like a great career in that.
Nice.
Which is amazing. And he played bass, and we couldn't play for like, at first, but we got, by the time that I was leaving high school, like, we were like, for a high school band, we weren't too bad. Like, we got to open for this band Harmony Riley that was big around Rockford area, which was Dax Nielsen and Miles Nielsen.
Oh yeah,
like children of Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, which was amazing, and like, that was a huge deal to us, right? Like,
right.
And then from there, like, it. Something like switched, sort of, because like I actually pulled away from music a little bit for a little while after that. Like, I dove more into the athletic side of things. Mm-hmm. And also, like, and then I was playing still, but then after this little section of my life, let's call it 2 years, and then met you at like when I was in This Is the End with some other friends of ours, like, that's when it was a total switch of like, I'm taking this seriously. I want to do this. This is happening, blah, 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 blah. Like, that kind of thing.
So what was some of the, kind of rewind a little bit. Growing up in Rockford, you did have some kind of music royalty, as it were, around there, some kind of pillars of the music world around there. What kind of influences did you have to be a band, the framework of being a band, did you see coming up there?
So for us, like in terms of in high school, let's say, like,
yeah,
the framework for that group was based around, like, the beginnings of it were actually based around more like, kind of like a lot of us, right? Was like AC/DC, Metallica, like that kind of thing, right? That's kind of how it started. And then from there, as the jam band scene got bigger, like with Phish, String Cheese Incident, Sound Tribe, Sector 9, Humphreys Brigade, like all these bands that were getting bigger and bigger and bigger in that scene,
right,
kind of shaped and molded that group in terms of like more of this like jam band, but like had a rock element to it. But in terms of like local Rockford celebrity type thing, it didn't really, like, we didn't really like go into that realm of that type of music, but like, it was like, I remember hearing Cheap Trick on like an 8-track player, like in one of my parents' cars, like, which is like, and I remember like being like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Right. And like, but it didn't really like influence much of like either my playing or like
band. But did it kind of exemplify to you that being in a band could be real, because your 6 degrees of separation from people that had done it to such a degree wasn't, I mean, you were like 2 degrees separated or whatever.
Honestly, not at the time. And to be even more honest about it, like, now that you're asking me that, like, and thinking about it, like, I probably, like, that's such a good point of like that, like literally, like, my friends were like, I was friends with like a very large band's sons, like, and I still am. I still talk to Dax today, like, and that it can actually, it's not as far apart as you think it is.
Yeah, right.
And I've had other people, like a friend of mine said to me a couple of, like a year or two ago, like he said specifically, you'd be amazed on how far, like how far it feels apart, but you might know like two people separation from like someone bigger, right? Like in this situation, what we're talking about is like, it's almost like one person apart at this point, not even one person.
Okay. And it shows, it just gives such a clear identifier as to where the road can go.
100%.
It doesn't have to be such abstract thoughts. Like this is a real thing.
Yeah.
So how do you go from that world, getting out of high school, kind of getting out of the playing around bands, to getting into This Is the End, and now you want to start making this more of a career move? What did that feel like at the time?
So This Is the End formed based off my high school band and our friend Ryan's high school band and John Hannell and Simon Brown's band. So they had a band, I had a band, and then that formed out of, This Is the End essentially formed out of that. Like, and I remember I had moved back to Rockford for a little bit, and Simon was living there, and I was like, we should play music, and Ryan was living in Madison, and I remember like the first song we wrote was like with like 7 or 8 minutes long, and it was just like a jam pretty much. And the first show we ever played was just three of us, and it was in like during my younger brother's high school graduation, and in a barn, and like that
classic Midwest stuff right there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it started, right? And then John had like came back, and he was like, hey, like I'm playing keyboards now, and was playing guitar as well. And we're like, oh, this would be kind of cool. And at the time, big influences for that group being like RX Bandits being one of them, where you're like, have the keys and guitar both like playing simultaneously, and the one guitar player playing keys at like simultaneously is the wrong word, but like the guitar player is also the keyboard player kind of situation. And moving off of that, and then like other influences like Yes, King Crimson were like, and bringing all those elements together is kind of how that whole thing molded and shaped.
So you had some career aspirations before this though, right?
Yeah. So like outside of music, are you?
Yeah.
Saying? Yeah. So like outside of music, like, My initial, like, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was kind of floating around, but like I had gone to college like right out the gate out of high school, which a lot of people do, for like communications and marketing. And I did not know what I was doing. I remember like I got to school, like my, like the sole purpose I went to this school was to play soccer. Had not for music, not for anything. It was solely like, I want to play soccer and I have to get a job. Like music was like, oh, this is something to do for fun.
Right.
Kind of situation. And then fast forward 2 years, getting back with Ryan and Simon and John, like realizing like, oh, I want to be playing more. And that kind of more than swung the needle still like towards the arts, towards the music thing. And then went into the audio engineering realm of things when we met.
Yeah. Right.
And, but then still having like on the, like kind of in the back of my head, like I might need to get this like day job situation.
So that's what I'm curious about. How does it feel when you're jumping ship from this soccer and communications world to I'm going to make music and do this? Because I think this is one of the things that's kind of unique about your story. Mm-hmm. You know, you've made these turns with really little inhibitions. Just like, all right, now we're going to go do this. So how does that feel when you're shifting gears back into music? Were you scared? Did it just seem like this feels so right, I'm into it? Or
so, and this actually plays into a very interesting situation when like, to your point. So like I got done with school, I rolled in kind of into audio engineering, which I loved. Like still to this day, I still do session work out of my own house. Like I still do stuff, not quite as much as I used to, but I still do stuff, right? And I've found that it is an invaluable tool to be able to like, hey, I can set up microphones on my drums and record. Is it going to be as good as like a professional audio engineer that's doing this every day? No. But can I do it? Yes.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that can't do that, right?
So having an empowering skill set.
Yeah. Can I get on an analog board and be like, oh, I know what this, 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 and this are? Yeah. And kind of work myself around it. Would it take me a little bit? Yes. But can I do it? Yes. I can like patch in a 2-inch tape machine if I needed to, like on a board, like just given the like, oh, here's where the ins and outs are. Okay, cool. Like give me like an hour, but I can do it. Right.
Kind of
thing. And after that was like, what you're asking me specifically was the turning point. And what I mean by the turning point towards the music even more was, I will never forget this, is I decided after that I was going to go and get my 4-year degree, because I was like, I want to have that, and two, I didn't know what I was doing.
Right? And you had 2 2-year degrees at this point?
I had 1 2-year degree at this
point. And just part of another one.
Yeah, like very part of another one.
Yeah.
And I went to Columbia College Chicago. I showed up for orientation, did my thing, and I remember like my parents were there, and my mom's like, "Oh, like, so you signed up for music business and like all this stuff?" And I was like, "No, I'm doing music performance." And she looks at me. She's like, she kind of like looks at me like a little scared, understandably, and she's like, "What are you gonna do for a job?" I was like, I don't know, but I like this way too much to not like it, like do it this in this realm.
That was a big commitment.
That was a very big commitment, right? Like music school is a commitment, like just like school in general, right? Like, or just like anything in general, right? Like whether you are teaching yourself to do something or you are in school to do it, it is a commitment no matter what, right? And like, I remember that turning point of being like, I wanted a 4-year degree personally. And I didn't know what I was going to do for a job, but I knew that I was so interested in this that that was going to be the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did it, right?
So it was more excitement than anything.
So much more excitement. And as I got through it, like towards like getting towards my senior year and that kind of stuff, I changed things around. And I am forever happy I did it this way. At Columbia, you are able to merge 2 different majors together. So I merged music performance in with music business.
There you go.
And that is where, per our conversation of man of many hats that I've done things, I started working on the business side.
Right.
And performing at the same time, which has both led me in directions of very, like gotten me out of tight situations as a band leader or as a musician, because I can be like, well, no, this is actually what the contract says, or this is what's laid out, or that's not how we're going to do things, that kind of thing. And it's just educated my brain of like both on the music business side, but then also on a business side entirely.
Right.
Right. Like, and that can lead into like what my day job has been in the past and like that kind of stuff. But like in the business sense, like that's where I kind of gained some of that knowledge.
Talk to me a little bit about the fork in the road between all of the drumming and the freelance learning and the bar gigging and things you had been doing to what it's like when you get to Columbia and now you're starting to learn drums in a different way. What's a 4-year degree in music performance and music business entail?
So for me personally, this is just me personally. It's different for everyone.
Yeah, of course.
For me personally, I wish I would have done it in a little bit of different way, but I look at it in 2 different ways. One, you can, and you're going to love this. Mm. You can squeak by and do the like practice and play in every single ensemble you can possibly get your hands on and play gigs and network your butt off and just squeak by in your grades and get the piece of paper and be done, right? Or you can get really, really good grades, work really, really hard on that aspect of things, not necessarily have as much time, like, and this is just me personally, not have necessarily as much time to do as many ensembles, that kind of stuff, still do well in school, that kind of stuff, and still get that piece of paper, right? If I was to go back and do this all over again, I would squeak by on grades and I would play more, right? Because I went the other way, which I'm not disappointed about. Like I graduated with honors. I worked my butt off, right? Like, and I wanted to, like, right? And I don't consider that bad. But for me, if I would have gone the other way, the career aspect in terms of where I'm at now might have been a little different.
Because just the weight of networking.
just the weight of networking and what that is. Because as you know, this business is who you know.
Right.
It's literally who you know, like for 90% of that. Like,
did that course of that education make you see drums in a different way? Or did it help you refine where you were already at? Because I know some people will get apprehensive to take lessons or learn too much because they don't want to ruin their juju. You know what I mean? So being in a more regimented environment, how did that change the way you saw your instrument and playing?
I actually liked it personally because I knew I needed – that I was here and I needed to be here. Right. And so for me, I needed my butt kicked. Yeah. Essentially. And that's where it kind of goes where like I should have gone more probably towards squeaking by on grades and towards more the ensemble thing. Excuse me. But I liked the regimented portion of it.
Right.
And since then, but I will say this, afterwards, it was very difficult to want to even play or listen to music. Because you're so in it every single day. It's like you're working on music theory. You're working on ear training. You're working on – because like in music school, you have to be able to play keyboard. So learning how to play piano. Plus you're learning your instrument. Plus you're working on ensembles. Plus like here's your history class, your math class, your science, like that kind of stuff.
Oh, man.
So you're just like – you're in it.
Very different from the Madison Media Institute.
Very, 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 very different. And very different also from just like gigging, right? Like gigging, like you got to show up on time. You got to have your stuff together in terms of like your parts and that kind of stuff. But you show up, you play, and cool, right?
Yeah, this is,
you show up, you play. Oh, now we're analyzing it all. Oh, now I have to be able to hear like a perfect fifth and be able to sing it or like – and be able to do that on command, like that kind of stuff, and be able to dictate it. It's like your ears almost get tired.
So was there a time as a drummer where you found that to be extraneous and you didn't want to do it, or were you just enthusiastic to do it because this was just another empowering skill set you could add?
Both. Especially like, so let's take ear training for example. Ear training for drummers, and I can't say drummers as a whole, like drummer being myself, was difficult because not playing a like chordal instrument, guitar, bass, piano, like you're not used to hearing like minor second, perfect fifths, that kind of stuff. You're used to hearing tones, rhythms, that kind of stuff. So in class, the singers were very good at the like singing these like pitches and that kind of stuff. And the drummers would be better at the rhythmic dictation.
Right.
Because we're like, oh, it's quarter note, eighth note, here's a run of 16th notes, dotted eighth, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
and where the singers would struggle more with that. So I actually took advantage of that. My friend, she was a fantastic singer. I got her to help me with the singing part, and she was actually really good with the rhythmic part. So she gave, like, she like tutored me in the singing part because she was like, she's like, you can do this. We just got to work on it. And so she helped me like get through like a bunch of stuff, which was fantastic.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you get out of Columbia and you've got another bunch of skills. Where does this road go from there? I mean, now mom wants you to get a job.
Yeah. Mom wanted me to get a job. So at the end of my time with Columbia, I had started working at a management agency called Mitch Marlowe Management. Which we had a couple bands on, and so went towards the music business side because like I was still playing, but had to make money,
right?
Like, and very common in the music industry just as a whole, you work for free for a while, right? So I started working for Mitch, got my feet wet, gave me my first shot, I cannot thank him like more than enough for giving me this shot. Like I got opportunities like that some people might not ever get in their entire lifetime, right? Like I got to like work Lollapalooza for one of our groups, and like it was tough. Like I was guitar teching, bass teching, and running around like tour-ish managing assistant kind of person situation.
Running,
exactly. And he gave me my first shot on the business side. I started working for a record label management company called Pivotal Alliance. That was, I met a good friend of mine now, Alexi Front. I met him at a DePaul music industry job, like, fair. And I, like, wasn't
networking
I wasn't going to even talk to him because this was, like, the record label and management was, like, it was a metal. I wasn't a huge metal person. Mm-hmm. And I saw him and I was, like, I'm going to talk to that dude. And I went and talked to him and he gave me a shot again. And like, I did endorsement deals, tour logistics. So, like, this is going to age me a little bit, but you're going to love this. Like in the, like, 2000, like, 7, 8, when you would tour, you would take those big fat 3-ring binders.
Oh yeah. 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 You know, yes.
Like MapQuest maps,
all the advances,
everything. Yep. It was my responsibility to put those together. So, like, here's your map to the venue. Here's your map from the venue to the hotel.
Yep.
Here's, and back and forth. And then it's like, here's your time slot, blah, 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 blah. So, like, I would put together all the, like, plane flights, tickets, the whole shebang, right? I actually still to this day really love doing it. Like, the travel person who I am, like, I get giddy about it. It's kind of weird. Like, some people are like, why do you like this? I was like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But, like, did that for him and, like, endorsement deals. So, like, I would have EPKs for each band, one sheets, all that kind of stuff. And I would find deals for them. So, like, one of the bands, like, they wanted guitar picks from Pick Boy. Got guitar picks from Pick Boy for them. Like, we stamped, like, a graphic on the pick for them, and each member who played guitar had their name on it, and it was great. It was a sweet deal. And so I would work on that stuff.
What do you think it is about your personality or who helped you have the confidence to just talk to people? Because it seems like you've been able to open a couple of these doors for yourself by just approaching people who didn't gatekeep on you. So how do you so fearlessly approach people? Is it just the desire of wanting to do it and nothing stops you? Or have you just always been someone who will talk to anybody?
That is an excellent question. I think whether this is right or wrong, that you don't know what the answer is until you ask the question. Like, it could be no. Okay. But if it's yes, that can change your life. And that's kind of how I've approached everything.
Was that something you were taught, or you just asked a couple questions and some started working out in your favor and you were like, hey, I'll just keep doing this?
I'll try to tell this story as quickly as possible because it's happened where I've gotten slapped on the wrist a couple times because of it. And I remember specifically this one, like, so my father's from Southern Arkansas. We were down there and one of my grandmother's neighbors had a farm and with four-wheelers and stuff on. And he would take us to the farm and, like, that kind of stuff. And on the way back one time, we stopped at a convenience store and he was like, oh, if you guys, like, want anything, let me know. And, like, my younger brother is very much at the time, like, oh, don't ask. Like, we got to be more, like, because my parents brought us both up to be super polite and I thank them.
Right.
Like, for that, like, for sure. And my brother was like, oh, like, got this small little thing. And he was like, oh, are you ready? This man was like, are you ready to go? I was like, no, I want to look around. And I was like, can I have this? And I remember my younger brother getting so upset with me. Like, oh my God.
You've blown it.
You broke our cover. Like, yeah. And, like, I remember that story and I still think about it today. When I ask people certain questions, I'm like, should I be asking this? But then, like I said, like, I got slapped on the wrist for it that time, and I've gotten slapped on the wrist for it before, but it's never been a situation where it's, like, horrible, right? And as I've gotten older, I've learned, like, there are ways to ask questions and there are not ways to ask questions, right? Like, you and I are very good friends. I can ask you almost whatever I want to, right?
Yeah.
If not whatever I want to.
Yeah.
But, like, if we weren't friends at all, I can still ask you what I want to, but in a different way.
Right.
In a more open-ended, polite, like, that kind of thing, right? And I have just kind of learned throughout my life, if you don't ask, you'll never know, right? Like, And it's okay to ask questions, right? Like, and by asking questions gets you information and like good information. Like, I can't tell you how much stuff I've learned over the course of my life. I'm just like I still today, like on, like I will email people of like, hey, what preamps are you using for X, Y, and Z? And they might not get back to me, right? But when they do, it's like, oh, hey, very nice to meet you, blah, 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 blah. It's not asking them for like, can you get me something? It's just asking for information.
Right.
Right. Like, and the long story short is like, if you don't ask, you'll never know.
Yeah. And lots of people are willing to share information even when you don't think it.
Yeah.
So is it really that the philosophy has kind of played itself out for you that, you know, it's never really horrible if you ask a question you shouldn't, but it can actually be horrible if you don't ask a question you should.
Yes. It can, like it a couple of times it has, like, and I can't specifically, actually I can, like there's been a couple of times where I've asked the question and it changed the course of some things.
Right.
Like, which is like, I know one particular like scenario that happened recently. Like, I put myself out there, I asked the question, and it has changed the course of like some things, like musically wise, which is like forever grateful for.
Well, this is the crux of being able to have multiple skills, multiple tools in your box and being able to parlay it into the next thing. Okay, so yeah. So you're at the point where you're getting your feet wet a little bit in the music industry from the business side of things, but that's not exactly the shoes that fit you. Mm-hmm. So how do you parlay into the next round?
So the next thing, so after Columbia, I left and went to South Korea and taught English.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And so being a person that I do many different things. So I was there for a year and because I had to make money, played there, like in per asking questions and that kind of stuff, found myself into a situation where a very good jazz drummer couldn't speak English at all. Met him. Somehow we figured out a way that he let me use his practice space and I was practicing there. Formed a band there, toured there, played there, and like kind of like had this experience of like, we're still doing music, but I'm making money now. I'm not like completely broke, right? So like I'm teaching, which is like not businessy at all, and I'm teaching English to the middle school kids.
You're teaching English to middle school kids, but are you bilingual?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, I learned how to, like when I was there, but I don't remember half of it.
Okay, so just as an aside, how do you teach somebody English if you can't speak their language?
It was specifically conversational. They wanted me to only speak in English. That was it.
Well, that's an easy enough task.
Yeah, it was great. It was like, but it made me, it made me respect teaching even more.
Right.
And because of that, I can now parlay that into teaching drum students.
Right. Okay. So South Korea is a long way from drumming in Illinois. How do you get back to the States? Where does this road go?
So from there. So I get back stateside after traveling like everywhere, like fixing my travel bug situation. And I didn't have a gig. No gigs. Fresh out of gigs as you could get, right? And I from there kind of split away from, not from music as a whole, but I was kind of like, I got done and I was like, I don't know if I want to play right now. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, right? And that's where the cycling industry came in.
Yes.
And
this was pretty significant.
This is very significant because that is the cycling industry and that world has been a parallel path to music for a long time now. So I get back, I start working for one of like Trek Bicycle at one of their stores and
just a retail store. You're talking?
Just a retail store.
Yeah.
And worked in sales, like learned how all that world works. So like, that's kind of where the business side of me has come in more is like, learning the retail business, what it takes to sell a thing. It can be whatever it is, right? Sell a thing and what it takes to do that and run a store and like margins and customer service and the whole thing and talking to people. And that is the key that I think even more now as I'm sitting here is I learned how to talk better with people and discuss better with people because of that. Mm. Because it's like, while I'm trying to sell you something, right? But I need to get certain information from you to be able to give you information to get you onto like a bicycle, as an example, that's the proper fit in everything, right?
Right.
Same as in the music world. I have to be able to talk to you and get across like, hey, I need X, Y, and Z things. You need X, Y, and Z things for me. How can we make this work?
Right.
So that's
weird. The commonalities you find.
Oh, yeah, very much so. So did that for about 4 years. Which was great experience. Retail is a thing, right? Like it is. And then parlayed that in staying in the music world into product development. So I have, as a man of many hats and tips and tricks, we'll call it, like I grew up with my father teaching me the mechanical side of every single thing it feels like that you can imagine. We're talking airplanes, cars, electrical, the whole shebang, woodwork, everything, right? So product development fed that many things that I do, fed that itch of that.
Right.
Right.
That's kind of the creative and analytical at the same time.
Exactly. So I did product development for 7 years.
Damn.
Yeah. Until more recently. So did product development for like that long, did full bicycle product development. I've worked on carbon forks, seat posts, apparel, like cycling bags, that kind of stuff. And I learned, like, that's where I learned, like, my business portion of it, like data analyzing, like, okay, as an example, like, why does this part, as an example, why does this part, why does it need to be made? Is it solving an issue? Is it helping people? And what's the data to back that? Sales, retail, like retailers, like feedback.
Right.
What's in the marketplace now? So like, and like.
What a fun game.
Completely. And like, I say this a lot, like about like, but like my supervisor, like Laura, like I'm forever grateful for this woman. Like she taught me all of that. Like, here's how to do it. Right. Like, and took me from like here to here within like a very short time. And so now I can, like, from a business standpoint, like I can run these numbers on my own now. And this is without a business background at all. Like this was all taught on the job kind of situation.
Well, it's your willingness to learn seems to be one of the.
Yeah, it is. And like, I like learning new things, right? Like it's fun. Like learning new things is fun, regardless of what it is.
So maintaining that mentality that learning is fun has been a huge leg up for you.
Yeah. And like, there's definitely been times where I hated it. Right.
Do you think that you come across people like Laura and these other people who could be gatekeepers, but they don't gatekeep on you because they see that in you?
Possibly. Like she treated me, and still to this day, like treated me as like, yeah, cool. Like you have X amount of knowledge. Like I have X amount of knowledge. I can get you better.
Yeah, I was going to say you smack of teachable and enthusiastic regardless of.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I am a high energy, enthusiastic person.
I know.
through and through. Yeah. Like I am a ball of energy that like I am. And that's kind of why like I can't just do one thing. I have to simultaneously. And like that, is that good, bad? I don't know. Some people might say it's bad. Some people might say it's good. I don't know. I just can't stop doing
like, multiple
things at all times, right? Like, and that's just how it is.
So, but the bicycle thing
man cannot live on bicycle alone. So, I was playing music still at the same time, right? And very recently, I got out of the bicycle industry, and I have put my everything into being a full-time musician.
But you were dirt biking and stuff somewhere in that mix too,
right?
Oh, yeah,
that's a good point. That's a good point. I totally forgot about that. So in addition to, I grew up like normal, like normal kids, but like most kids grow up on bicycles. I grew up riding dirt bikes.
This was part of your dad's mechanical nature?
Yeah. Like my first dirt bike, like I was seven. I've been on like, and there's a lot of kids that were that way. Like, or there's like pro racers and like that kind of stuff. And like, I have photos of me with like a snowmobile helmet on that was like black sparkle and like bubble shield and like that kind of thing.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. Right. And
high fashion and safe.
Oh, you know it. And like super like 80s'd out like jacket with like the high-vis orange and gray on it. And, like,
yeah.
And like feet could barely touch the ground and like that kind of stuff.
That would be a hot fit today.
Oh, right. Like it's so good. And so like I grew up riding like and like took some time off when I got my license, kind of a lot of people do. But like I just like – so along all this stuff, like I race in the wood, like race woods bikes and like still ride today. Like when I get back home, like a friend of mine, I was on the phone with him already. He's like, when are we going riding? I was like, yeah, let's soon, like got a couple things, but then I'll get my bike ready and we're going to go ride. So it's like, while that is one of the most fantastic things that I've ever been able to do with injuries at times from a drumming perspective, it's not exactly like the best thing to be doing.
So you had to make a decision at some point. This is where you get to, all right, I'm going to start pushing more chips into the music bed.
Exactly. So we have, so up till a year and like 4 months ago, we had a day job, product development, bicycles. We had riding dirt bikes. We had playing music, we had
traveling,
we had probably a host of other things. Right?
And just life. You got to live somewhere.
Yep. And then a year and change, like I said, that day job went away. Not by my own accord, but that day job went away. And at that moment, I truly think this, and as I'm even saying this, like, I think that I started to believe it even more at that moment. And as we all have these moments in life where it's like, you have a fork in the road, that in addition to some other things, like that was a year and a half ago, was the fork in the road for me. And right now it's been a situation. Am I still trying to get a day job? Yeah. There's no reason not to.
Yeah. But
I have like for my current living situation and some other things, I have this music is it. This is what we're doing. That's all I have done. Like for the past, like a solid year, that's all I did. Like I've done. I have traveled all over the East Coast. I have traveled all over the Midwest. It doesn't matter. Like, and I've kind of had this mindset for a couple of years. It doesn't matter where the gig is. If it's a gig, I will be there. It could be in Alaska. And if even like, I will be there. Like, it doesn't matter. Like at this point, like I am willing to go anywhere and do this. Right. And there's not a lot of people that will do that, understandably. Right. Like there's expenses involved and that kind of stuff. I will do it without question.
Well, your willingness is one of your secret weapons that everything else gets built on.
And it's been that way. So for the past year and a half, like that's what I've been doing, right? Like I played with a group out of Minneapolis, that I was driving 5 hours for rehearsals and gigs because this is what I'm doing now. I am putting everything into this. And like, I got a lot of opportunities with them and they gave me a huge like shot and it was great. Right. Like, and I loved every part of it. But that's just kind of like one of the examples of like you could tell me to come down. If like, you're like, hey man, I've got a gig for you. Can you be down here? It's a bar gig. I need you to play. I'd be like, yeah, sure. I'll see you next week. Right. Yeah. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just like, that's what I'm doing. Like everything is being put into this kind of situation. And some people might say like, well, that's kind of ridiculous. Why are you doing that? You're spending a lot of money. I don't care. Like I just don't.
Well, in theory, you only get to live once, I've heard.
Exactly. And like you only get to live once, one, and two, like I am the person, I have kind of put it in my mind more recently, like I am the person that you can count on for a gig, no matter where that gig is. Like, I drove 20 hours one time to play a gig for $100.
You gotta love playing
hours. I played two gigs, sorry. And because of that,
for everybody out there who's not a musician, this is how it goes.
This is how it goes, exactly. And because of that, I now, like, some of those people I play with are some of my greatest friends ever, and my greatest, like they go to bat for me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because of that I did this, right? But it was that I met them. Like, I had never met these people in my entire life except for two of them. And like the other, like one of my really good friends, Zach Baker, he goes to bat for me constantly. And like, I go to bat for him whenever possible. And it was because that trip, like, we now have that relationship.
Well, that's kind of the sweet intersection of where having a broad set of empowering skills matched with a good network becomes what makes it so you can move forward.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I've just kind of had this mentality of like, this is what it's going to take.
So that's kind of brought an interesting question to my mind. A lot of people say that but it is a popular thought that you can't have a plan B because that just screws up your ability to focus on plan A. And it doesn't really seem like you've had a lot of plan Bs, but you've had a lot of like plan A is running side by side. Would you say that this is the first time that music is the only plan A? This is the only horse in the stable? Or do you have some other plan A's running?
I think I always have plan A's running. However, to be very transparent, like about that question, like up until like, excuse me, up until probably a week ago, I had all the plan A's going, right? Like, oh, we're going to go racing in a couple of weeks, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And until very recently, like very, very recently, like the plan A of music is the plan. That is the plan. We're like, am I going to have to possibly have a side job? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, totally. Like right now I work at a fantastic, like, I can't even tell you how fantastic this like camping store is. Like, fantastic camping store, like family owned. They are amazing for me, like to me, like they are so flexible with my schedule, which is, you know, like as a musician, like those are gold type jobs.
Right.
Right. Like,
right.
And.
Cause they give you that sweet magic of being able to manage your time a little bit.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Like I texted my supervisor 2 days ago and I was like, hey, I got to go to Nashville now the 13th through the 15th. I know I was supposed to work. Can I move my schedule around and work this coming weekend instead? She's like, yep, sure. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out when you get back.
Well, shout out to her and all the business owners that are helping people be flexible out there. Cause that is a commodity these days.
Yeah. Like definitely like shout out to Yellowwood. Like they're like the camping store, like they're amazing. Like, and like the family is amazing who runs the place. And like, and I can't thank them enough for that flexibility and like just giving me like a job essentially. But like up until, like I said, like very, very, like very recently, it was the simultaneous paths. And now it's like, no, like no more, like the simultaneous paths are B's. This is A.
Right.
Like we, and it has to be that way.
That's what I was wondering. Does it feel different?
It feels different. And like I had another thing like happen recently that like a fork in the road kind of situation. And now it's like, all right, cool. Like it's all good. But if we're going to make this work, it's go time kind of thing. And people might say like, well, you're at this age, you're too late, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry.
The game is changing quite a bit in that regard.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like the stories I hear from people of that situation, like almost wanting the older players because the younger players coming up while they're amazing, right? They can't hold, like sometimes can't even hold a groove because they're worried about other things, which I totally understand. And
oh, yeah.
That's not taking away from anything of what they're doing because
they are
legends, right? But there is a time and place for certain things, and yeah.
Yeah, and the pie has gotten bigger in some ways,
yes,
and smaller in other ways. But I think that's just the flux of the entertainment industry and performing musicians. We could do a whole nother hour on that one.
100%.
Easily.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about the projects that you're with now and some of the things you're most excited for now that you've got Plan A and you're circling some of the horses around the things you're involved with.
Totally. So I just got out of the studio with a group called Gentleman Speaker out of Minneapolis, which was great. Recorded at this studio called Honeytone Studios in Neenah, Wisconsin, out of all places. Fantastic place, like some of the best gear I've ever seen.
Yeah, it looked like a beautiful spot.
It looked like a lot of fun. A lot of fun, like full Neve console, like outboard gear everywhere, like from a guitar aspect. I'm not a guitar player, but like amps and guitars, like you wouldn't, that you're like be drooling over, right? Like, and multiple snare options and kits, and like I could piece together kind of what I wanted to, like for a sound that I wanted, even cymbals. And like, it was a really great experience compared to like other like studio scenarios I've been in. While they were great and everything, I wasn't able to like,
they can be real rigid.
Yeah, a little bit more rigid. And it's like, oh, I have to bring in my kit. Like, I didn't have to bring in my kit, and I could use like a different snare for this song and a different snare for that song, and like really like hone in the sound what I want it to be. So just got done with that, which was really fun. This goes kind of back to asking questions and that kind of stuff. I play with a group from time to time called Immortal Girlfriend, that is probably one of the things I'm most excited about because it is so different than anything I've ever done.
Yeah, they got some really cool stuff.
Yeah, like it's super fun. And it's a situation of like per asking questions is the reason I got the gig was just asking them for it, essentially. But they just came out with a new album as well. That's really, really good. And I'm really excited about both projects, and I'm excited for like, the Gentleman Speaker album to come out because I haven't been in a studio, like a real studio outside of mine in a while, and excited for all that kind of stuff, which is cool. Just some upcoming gigs with Immortal Girlfriend that I have coming up, and then some other things that are in the pipeline that, a thing in Nashville that's in the pipeline, and then one other thing that, I'm crossing my fingers, hopes to come to fruition kind of situation. So
some of the big overarching things throughout your many forks and many hats is you got to be enthusiastic.
Yeah.
You have to stay thirsty to learn, and you can't be afraid to change gears and talk to people.
Yeah. Especially the changing gears to talk to people like that portion of it, like you got to have it.
It's really opened up a lot of doors for you, it seems.
100%.
And it doesn't matter if it was athletics or music or straight out career.
Yeah.
That one seems to really have been a good tool in your box.
Yeah. And now that you're saying that, like that's how I've moved stuff is just talking to people. Like I have friends just like randomly from like, oh, met this random drummer somewhere because I went and talked to him after his show and now we're friends. Like it would be that kind of scenario. And it's like one of my good friends, Keith, like who has been a absolute like champion for me and like person that I can like talk to about like the music thing and vent to and like, and then, but also on the same side, like, he'll send me like, hey, check this out. What do you think about this? And he'll give me like very honest opinions of what he thinks about like what I'm playing, but it's constructive and it helps a lot. But
those people are so valuable.
He is so valuable to me, extremely valuable to me. But I would have never met him if I wouldn't like have gone up to him. Because like we were sharing a bill together. Like I went up to him immediately. And he came like it was almost like we met in the middle and he was like, dude, that was awesome. I'm like, you were awesome. And it was just kind of like blown up from there. Like, and like, that's kind of like how relationships happen. Like kind of the same thing, like how you and I met, like.
That's what I was going to say. You know, networking is still king and face-to-face interactions don't just can't be beat by anything. Even like you said, if you got to drive 20 hours to do it, the networking and the friendships and the growth you've been able to parlay from that is really what that 20 hours of driving was.
Absolutely. And like, I look at networking differently, like, and I think you'll like this specifically. Networking, like, is a term that like is used in terms of like meeting people and like that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Works. I personally don't like the term networking, mm-hmm. and here's why. I look at networking as a thing, and not always, don't get me wrong, but I look at networking as like, oh, a thing to get something sometimes out of, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like that. I like creating relationships.
Ah, that has a more of a symbiotic tone to it.
Yes, because creating relationships is more important to me than creating something that's like, oh, you're just a person that like might be able to help me with something. And in the music world, as you know, more than any, like anyone, just having connections doesn't do much for you. You have to have these genuine relationships, right? And like a friend of mine told me this, and like a friend of mine used to run a podcast, and like I talked to him a couple of different times, and now we talk all the time. We don't even talk about playing drums. We talk he was talking about what I'm exactly talking about on one of his episodes of like create relationships, don't network, right? And like I did, like some musicians and that kind of stuff have like where you can pay to get it, like information and like that kind of stuff. Consultations. And I did that with him.
That's another buzzword, like networking.
Exactly. And I did that with him, and like literally we did that once, and now we're friends, because like we don't necessarily talk about playing drums. Like we talk about cycling because he rides bikes. I ask him how his family is. Like, he was just in doing airplane stuff recently, and it was like, oh my gosh, like, this is awesome. Like, and like we don't even talk drums, because that it, like we like while I've never even met this person in person, like we've never met before, but it's a relationship.
And if the drum talk needs to be had, it can be had.
It can be had, right? I can ask him a question, and it's okay to ask him a question, right? Because it's a relationship. Like we have bonded, like we have never met in person. I've never actually seen this person besides on a photograph or like, but like I created a relationship with him, and that's how I do things now. Like both in the cycling world, music world, doesn't even matter, right? And more recently, in terms like of that, is you have to keep up with those relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very recent thing. And one of our very good friends, I've had this conversation with Andy of like who we don't get to see very often, right? And like more recently, I have made it an absolute point of my life to be connected with those relationships.
Same.
Like if I don't talk to you for a year, like, that's going to be weird.
I was going to say.
Right. Yeah. Like, and like, that'll be like a text to like, well, I'll just use you an example. That'll be a text to you, be like, hey man, hope things are good. Right. And that could be the simplest thing. Right. But like I am doing this with people that like all the way down the line of like one of my friends, like best friends from fifth grade, like now we're talking again, not because we weren't talking because of anything bad. It was just because like,
Connections lost
and like that kind of stuff. He lives in a different place than I do, and like we both get busy, that kind of thing, right? I have another friend that literally, like, I send him texts, he doesn't send the text back, and I told him, I was like, you're gonna keep getting these texts, and that's like eventually you'll answer them. And it's not because he's being mean, it's because he just gets busy, right?
Yeah.
But like I am making that an unruly point of my life now, that like you will hear from me at some point. Regardless of like what shape or form it is, you will hear from it. So going into that networking relationship thing, those are the relationships I want. I don't want just the person of like, hey, how's it going, man? Like, oh, like, can you get me this? No.
Right.
I don't want that. I want the, like, we are friends. we might not be like the tightest friends in the entire world, but I can call you my friend, kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess that's the real crux of it. It's just someone that you could call a friend.
Yes. And I think that the music industry as a whole has a lot of that like networking style,
yeah.
and not enough of a relationship.
It is weird. It is definitely
very weird.
That's a sign of our times. I guess that's what dates us more than anything.
Yeah.
That wasn't so much the case 20 years ago.
No. And even to the point now where it's like everything's more like text messages and that kind of stuff. Like, don't be surprised. Like, I've thought about this. If you start getting random phone calls from me.
Oh, I've switched to phone calls. And when I call people now and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? Call me. I try to smooth it over by saying I'm being 90s.
Yeah. Oh, that's
because the 90s way. Is cool.
Right. Right.
So I'm like, yeah, I'm just being 90s.
I love that. Well, yeah. Like today, it was either today or yesterday. I just randomly FaceTimed you. I was like, what's up, man?
Yeah.
Like,
no, I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
And I don't do that with every, because there's certain people like, it's like, I know you're not going to pick up the phone.
Yeah. Right.
but I just want like genuine relationships with people because it's fun and it's interesting. Like I know people all over the world because of this, because I've structured things, structured is the wrong world, but like I have gone about my life.
Made the effort to do it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of fun, let's get you out of here on something fun.
All right.
If you could play drums for either one group in the studio, you could get on one group's recording.
Oh boy.
You could be dream group, dead group, whatever you want. Or you could play on stage with any group. You can pick one. Who would it be? Oh, because, see, I know you like to perform as much as the studio, so you get either one.
Can I give you two?
Sure.
Okay. I can only tell you right now.
Yeah.
Because like right here.
Yeah, this is the on the spot fun question.
Live, and this is going to be kind of quirky, but not quirky is the wrong word. Like, okay, I'm going to give you three. I can't give you two. It is absolutely impossible.
All right, but I'm cutting you off there. Yeah, okay, that's fair. I'm just kidding.
I would like lean more towards live because of how much I like performing, but yeah. I would say Chromeo.
Oh, snap. Good answer.
Yeah, dude. Oh, they just put out a new album too. Like, oh my gosh. Like, yeah.
I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. So Chromeo would be one. This other group, Incognito, which is like R&B funk kind of group. Maybe this will be kind of lame, but like, honestly, like performing with Immortal Girlfriend, like is so much fun. Like,
that's what it's all about.
Like, it's just, and performing with the other groups that I play with and like that kind of stuff, it's insanely fun. And I love it. But like, when it comes to the Immortal Girlfriend part, like there's just a different element of like a backing track. And there's like a lot of things that like I don't get to do very often where within like rock bands and like that kind of stuff, like I love playing like indie rock, like it is so much fun.
Yeah.
And playing with Gentleman Speaker, it has been like super, super fun. And I love it. But Immortal Girlfriend, it's just different. And I think those three right this very second.
Hell yeah.
Chromeo
curveball at the end.
Oh man. Chromeo for sure. I saw them a couple of years ago in Minneapolis with like the Funk Lords. So they're like live band.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like the entire time, just jaw like dropped to the floor.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So,
well, brother, I very much appreciate you coming down here, taking the time to talk to us and share a little bit of your journey, man. I had a great time hearing from you, and I know I'll get to hear from you again soon.
For sure, man.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you. Yes. Love you, man.
Yes. Love you too.